Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast, the turkey edition. And who better to do this than the two turkeys that usually do this every week? See, that's a new introduction. But
that's
Andrew Malcolm is still the prince of Twitter and the regent of redstate.com. And I am apparently the prince of leaf blowers. Sorry about that, Andrew. I hope that that's not going to distract you.
We'll survive. So you have leaves. Yeah.
I've got gardeners who just happen to show up just as we're recording this. And I'm thankful for that, Andrew, because this is the week to be thankful.
This is great. This is better than the jokes of the day.
Yeah, which neither one of us came up with. And neither one of us actually have one.
As soon as you're speaking, they turn on the blower.
I mean, I think that that's right, because it was literally as soon as we were getting ready to, they were right outside my window blowing the sidewalk off, you know, from what they were doing earlier today. That's okay. It sounds like they're moving on, and so shall we. You know, we're recording this on Monday, and we have some interesting news. I don't think it's unexpected. It is a little bit early, though. Special counsel Jack Smith has decided that, on second thought, maybe he doesn't want to prosecute an incoming president-elect, and has asked he's asked to have the indictment in D.C. dismissed. That has to do with the January 6th related stuff and the election interference related stuff. And then he's notified the 11th Circuit that he's abandoning his appeal of Judge Eileen Cannon's dismissal of the documents case in Florida, the Mar-a-Lago classified documents case. And he's saying that's basically because the Department of Justice will not prosecute a sitting president. But in large part, it's because these were nonsense in the first place, and it didn't work. The whole point of this was to keep Donald Trump from becoming president again. And I think it actually helped him win an election that they were doing.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at all of the things, the variety of things that Biden crowd and his Justice Department and Soros prosecutors threw at him, it's stunning. And the hoaxers with the Russiagate, I mean, it's just stunning. And no matter how you feel about Trump, it's a gang up, and it's not fair. And Americans, I learned in politics, Americans have an innate sense of fairness. It sometimes takes a while to come out, but if something doesn't seem fair, and really doesn't seem fair, they'll take it out on people and collectively.
Well, yeah, they will.
And they did.
And pretty effectively. Yeah, they did do that. And I mean, I think that this is sort of the same thing that gets into the whole, you know, transgender in women's sports, right? Is that I think Americans see biological males competing against females as inherently unfair. And I don't know that that translates out to other issues, because one of the things that came out today is that Donald Trump is supposedly preparing an EO that will discharge all transgender service members on the basis of medical unfitness. And, you know, this is part of the whole, you know, de-woke the military thing that Donald Trump was running on, right? I mean, it's part of, he can claim it as part of his mandate, right? But I think that that might misread things a little bit. Now, I'm not saying I oppose that, but what I'm saying is I think that Americans might look at that and say, well, if they're serving and they're meeting an objective set of requirements, they may not like the idea of just kicking them out of those positions. But what they don't want is a military that is dumbed down to allow people who are unfit to serve. And I think that's a little different calculus, and it might be a little risky for Donald Trump to overthink what his mandate here actually is.
Exactly. And what you have heard about the EO may be a trial balloon to see. Because I don't think he wants a shitstorm to kick off. his term. You know, he wants to restart the what's that? The oil pipeline. He wants to start.
Oh, the Keystone.
He wants to restart Keystone. He wants to eliminate a lot of the DEI stuff, and that makes sense. But to throw people out of the military for one reason, but to restore the ones who were thrown out of the military for not getting a vaccine can seem contradictory.
Well, I mean, and it's what I wrote about too, is that, you know, I compared the two, is that, you know, people are unhappy about the idea of, you know, kicking out 15,000 people all at once because it's going to impact military readiness. And I'm thinking to myself, nobody, you know, the same people who were making that argument today had no problem with Joe Biden kicking over 8,000 service members out for refusing to take a COVID vaccine that turned out not to prevent uptake and not to prevent transmission, right? It does have an impact on, you know, your ability to handle a COVID infection, and that's fine. It's a therapeutic, but it's not a vaccine. And yet they kicked out more than 8,000 service people for refusing to accept the vaccine. And nobody was, the same people who were complaining, who weren't complaining then, are now complaining about military readiness, and you can't force that many people out all at once without impacting this and that and the other thing. And look, I mean,
Military readiness was the last thing on Joe Biden's mind. It was, right. He was virtue signaling. And as usual, those things are pretty empty.
Well, yeah. And I mean, we can make an argument that he's doing the same, that Trump's doing the same thing in reverse. And I don't like pendulum swinging policies when it comes to the military. I think we should have a
military
policy. We should have a rational policy that focuses on what the mission of the military is. And, you know, Rush Limbaugh used to talk about this all the time. The mission of the military is to kill people and break things. And anything else that you're doing there is a waste of time, or it's getting in the way of focus. And the idea that the military should be a model for social justice programs is very much a distraction from what their purpose is. Their purpose is to kill people and break things. And you shouldn't use them unless you really need to kill people and break things.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
But to get back to the Jack Smith thing, what I find interesting about this, many things I find interesting about this, is that, first off, it came a week early, which is really interesting to me. This thing, he was supposed to respond back by December 2nd, right? He got a stay put in place. And he said he needed until December 2nd to make up his mind as to how he wanted to unwind the case. So he's there a week early for both of these dismissals. And ABC News kind of supplied a little bit of the context of this. He's got to write a report before Merrick Garland leaves office. because if Merrick Garland isn't there, it will be, well, now it's Pam Bondi, right? Because Donald Trump, Matt Gaetz stepped out of the way so that, you know, Trump could make a little bit better choice for attorney general. And Pam Bondi isn't going to publish this thing. If Smith wants this thing published, his final report published, he's going to have to hand it off to Merrick Garland to do it. Yeah. And he doesn't have much time. I mean, we're less than 60 days out from inauguration day. Merrick Garland's term in office is going to expire on January 20th. Plus, it has to go through a security review because you can't reveal sources and methods in these reports. Mueller's had to do that. Every special counsel report has to do that. Robert Hur's had to do that. So I think that this was sort of a way to give himself an extra week to generate his report.
And also, it's likely to get less attention, the dismissal, in the holiday week.
That's a good point too. Yeah. That's actually a really good point. I didn't consider that when I was writing about it, but it does actually get a little buried in the news cycle.
Like a Friday news dump.
Yeah. Wednesday would have been even better. Wednesday at 4 p.m. I mean, clearly these guys don't know how to play this game, right? It's the whole Casey Stengel thing, right? Doesn't anybody here know how to play this game? So,
oh boy. And 60 days doesn't seem like much to him, but it seems like forever to me to get rid of this crowd.
Well, yeah. You know, and Donald Trump was already saying he was going to fire everybody that was involved in this on day one. He said it was going to take him 2 seconds to fire Jack Smith. And Jack Smith is clearly not going to give him the satisfaction of that. But he's also talking about firing everybody who worked with Jack Smith on this project, too. And some of those people are going back to the FBI and the Department of Justice. And some of them have civil service protection, but I suspect that they'll be arguing for that on the outside looking in for a while. I mean,
yeah. It's, well, you know, consequences.
Yeah, consequences.
And right? which we don't often have in Washington. I mean, think about Benghazi, which is still in my craw.
Think about Benghazi, think about Kabul.
Yeah.
You know, one of the people that they're talking about dealing with when Trump gets back into office is General Milley, who was part of the command structure that did that absolutely disgraceful bug out from Kabul and abandoned 14,000 Americans to the Taliban.
I don't normally defend him, especially since he alerted China that back channel about Trump. But
yeah.
It seems to me that in Kabul, the military, I don't know strategically how they screwed up, but they were following Biden's cluster fixer orders. You know, Biden said, well, first of all, he moved the withdrawal date from Trump's April date, which was before the fighting season. And then he moved it into the peak fighting season for September 11th because he wanted, I don't know how giving up on September 11th would be a great thing for him, but he did. And then he moved it back into August. And then he just pulled the plug in July. So, you know, these poor military schlumps are out there saying, well, okay, we've got 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden, no, it's tonight. Well, gee. Biden also said that there wouldn't be an evacuation. He dismissed their orders, their suggestions, wasn't orders. They suggested, well, no, you're going to need to keep at least 2,500 and preferably 8,000 for an evacuation. And Biden said, no. Well, you can't defy him. On the other hand, what they did was quietly organize 8,000 because they knew they were going to have to go back in. So the 8,000 were ready when they had to go in. And, you know, it wasn't the military's fault. Biden says, was asked, George Stephanopoulos asked him, he said, well, what about the hundreds of Afghans clinging to the outside of American planes and falling to their death? And Biden's response was, Mr. Empathy's response was, that was 4 days ago.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, well, that's not the military's fault that you've got a klutz there and they can't come out and say, boy, this guy is screwing up. Although Milley tried back channel with China. So, yeah, I could see there would be repercussions, but it's not all their fault that it got screwed up because you're giving the Taliban time to get ready to create chaos.
Right.
And we're still, and here's a mystery that Biden has refused to answer. Maybe Trump can get it out. But we've still, we're paying millions and millions of dollars to the Taliban. You know, he's giving it to them every month. Now, he refuses to tell the inspector general what it's for because he says it's not for reconstruction. And the inspector general's mandate is to look into reconstruction.
Right.
Well, so what he's doing is he's paying off the Taliban to let people out. That he should have let out and gotten out in the first place. Remember, he said, "Oh, Kabul, that will not be like Saigon," and it was exactly like Saigon.
That's actually a really good point, and I suspect that you're right that that's exactly what's happening with that. I will also say that I don't know how many they've actually gotten out, and nobody's asking that question. Media has been completely incurious on that point, and one has to wonder whether or not the incoming administration is going to start talking about that a lot more than they have in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's just, the whole thing is such a mess. And the southern border, and you just think about anything that Biden touched and
everything that he touched, it's all a mess, you know, again, what I would say is it's a mess and the media hasn't covered it.
No, right? Exactly. That's a mess too. That's an unconscionable, what's the opposite of obligation? Dereliction of duty. The media is constitutionally protected to be a government watchdog, and they've been a government lapdog, and they haven't checked him. They're not blowing the whistle on Biden for anything. I mean, think about this. It was, almost 4 years that they helped cover up he was not there mentally.
You talk about that in one of your VIP columns today. It's one of the things that I really wanted to discuss with you today, and we should really dig into this. And this is your Sunday column. Is anybody on duty? Biden falls silent, Harris goes missing, but Trump is here. And look, I mean, transitions, you and I have seen plenty of transitions.
Yeah.
too many of them to count. I don't want to admit to how many presidential transitions I've watched, right? But they're always a little fraught this way, especially when you're changing parties, right? Because you're coming in with very different sets of priorities, but there's an effort by both parties to provide a sense of continuity. And to Biden's credit, at least publicly, he's trying to do that, right? He didn't have to make a big deal of Donald Trump coming to the White House. He did. He's said some gracious things, which is good. But this guy's not there. And Kamala Harris, who really should be the backstop, right? She's in Hawaii. We haven't heard from her in almost 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It has no events on her public schedule.
I mean, what is up with that? She's still the sitting vice president, and we have a president who clearly needs assistance, right?
And he was out of the country in Brazil, giving away billions for the rainforest and war, and he authorized long-range missile use, and then goes off to South America. Now, that's something else I touched on in the column. The South America seems to be a black hole for presidents to do dumb things.
It was ever thus, though, right?
Yeah, right. And Americans, unfortunately, they don't think much about South America. It's not part of our innate culture like Britain or in Europe. But in 2011, Barack Obama took his mother-in-law on his official visit to South America. Oh, and on the way, he announced without telling Congress, but he announced to the media that he had joined the Nobel Peace Prize winner had obligated the U.S. to join the European effort to throw Muammar Gaddafi out of office.
The
hypocrisy on this. In 2002, the U.S. said, the U.S. and Britain and the allies said, okay, look, Muammar, if you give up your nuclear program, we'll leave you alone. So he did. And then, what is it, 10 years later, they throw him out. They went back on their word. And now, Russia went back on its word, allowing Ukrainian independence by invading them. But if you're Iran and North Korea, and that someday somebody comes along and says, well, you know, we'll guard you, we'll protect you if you give your nuclear weapons. He'd say, no, I don't think so. And who can blame them for that? It took 9 months. A crowd finally tore Gaddafi apart. They found him hiding in a culvert in his hometown. And that's when Hillary Clinton, wearing her sunglasses on her jumbo jet, said, "What? We came, we saw, he died."
Yeah.
It's like this is a pep rally. We pulled that game off. So being duplicitous. And by the way, a little historical anecdote, because Gaddafi gave up his nuclear weapons program, it happened to be the same weapon systems and hardware, software that Iran has. And that's what enabled the Stuxnet fraud with the Israelis and the Americans planting.
That's interesting.
Planting bugs inside their system and set Iran back 9 months or a year, their nuclear weapons program. This is so amazing. The system was monitoring them real time, what people were saying in front of the screen. And it went in and screwed up the alarm system. So they sent, the allies sent all of the centrifuges spinning totally out of control. They burned up and exploded, but the technicians in the lab were reading dials that said, no, everything's fine. that was brilliant, but it was all because Gaddafi gave up his weapon system. And because he did, he was vulnerable 10 years later. They took him out.
Well, I mean, you can draw the parallel to Ukraine. Same thing happened to Ukraine.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. The Budapest memorandum. And yeah. What happened in Libya? It's now a lawless state. Gaddafi may have been, he had a great hat collection, but he may have been a dictator, but he's a dictator who wore cool hats. Okay.
He didn't wear cool hats.
That's right. And he was in charge of a tough place. So you take him out, and now it's chaos. And that's what led to Benghazi, among many other things. And now they have terrorist factions fighting each other for control, alleged control of Libya. Meanwhile, they're doing terrorist training for ISIS spinoffs and Al-Qaeda and everything, just because they're infiltrating Africa next.
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
So the whole thing is whatever we get involved in. So now, let's say Trump comes in and he's expressed skepticism about helping Ukraine. If the U.S. stops helping Ukraine, Russia wins. I don't know what president would want that on its record. But you don't stop invaders by asking them. You know, it's only force, except that Hitler didn't voluntarily give up. In fact, it was Russia that threw him out with the same tactics they're using in Ukraine. Just throw a lot of people at him and eventually they'll overwhelm him. So let's say they have a truce. All right, we're going to have a truce. Everybody stays in place. So what does that do? That tells Putin that, you know, you go in, you be a son of a bitch, and you get Crimea, which gets him a warm water port. And you get a whole bunch of Eastern Ukraine. Now, think about it. That's what he did in 2008 to Georgia.
It's what he did in 2014 in Ukraine. They've had control of Crimea and the Donbass ever since 2014.
And something else I pointed out, I think that's just outrageous. The numbers vary, but anywhere from 3/4 to a whole million. Think of this, children have been taken away from their parents in Crimea and Ukraine and sent to Russia to become Russians. They go to re-education camps. They're punished if they speak anything but Russian. They have been reported that the children show up on Russian adoption sites. Now this gets, and I mentioned this in the column too, there's more details there, but what the bottom line is for the impetus of the invasion is that Putin needs people. He needs more people. They're having the same low birth rate and late marriage rate that the West is having, including the U.S. So he needs more people. So he's just basically stolen 1 million Ukrainians at a young formative of age, and he's turning them into Russians. And if he gets Ukraine, he'll have all that lush agricultural land, and then he can move on Moldova, which is not in NATO. There's no reason for him to stop, because over time he gets what he wants. So I hope we have enough backbone to stop it. And you know, you point out, or I point out, that everybody talks about $70 billion in military aid going to Ukraine. It doesn't go to Ukraine. 90% of that money is spent in the U.S. on creating jobs, making weapons, missiles, Javelin missiles, technology. It's all spent here. So, you know, it's not like we're giving it away to Ukraine to have party night on the Black Sea.
Right.
Yeah. So we got a couple minutes left,
and I did want to touch really quickly on your other column, which is the, you know, what we can always rely on with our new president, in light of the fact that we now have, I think, the entire cabinet, with the exception of the U.S. trade representative, I think, is the only position that's, I mean, that's kind of a cabinet level position, and that's not yet.
I thought you wanted the guy back, the Lighthizer.
Lighthizer. Yeah, could have been. Yeah. I guess I hadn't seen that yet. Last I saw, that was still.
It may not be official either.
Yeah.
I'm not involved much in foreign trade.
So I don't even know how to take that. I'm just going to let viewers take that for what it's worth. But, you know, the thing that I see out of this cabinet, and there's a couple clunkers in there. I think that the labor secretary decision was not a great decision. And I'm not crazy about Kennedy at HHS either. And of course, Gates is out. And I really like Bondi as AG. But I mean, you know, your mileage may vary. Some people may feel differently about, like, say, Pete Hegseth or other people. But what's, I think, the most interesting aspect of the cabinet that he has picked is that they're really, almost all of them are outsiders.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've been in some of them have been in government, but they're outsiders to the Washington establishment. And that's really the key difference between this cabinet and his first cabinet. He was picking some Washington insiders the last time.
Yeah.
Didn't work out very well for him. And this is, I think, Drain the Swamp 2.0. This time I really mean it.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, that's I think what you're getting at with your column too, right?
Absolutely. He learned a lesson, which is good. I mean, it's encouraging, because he didn't learn a lesson about keeping his mouth shut sometimes. But this shows, and you know, you say outsiders, but they're also loyal to him. So you won't have a lot of people coming in to help him in the White House for 9 months and then writing a tell-all book about how terrible it is and making a lot of money.
Well, in other words, it's not going to be Scaramucci. It's not going to be a cabinet of Scaramucci.
Jesus. Yeah, exactly. And I see that Melania says that she's not going to be in the White House full time. And
I didn't see that.
Yeah. And she's not going to, she has other business to do, and she's not going, she didn't accept, she turned down an invitation from Jill Biden to come and tour the White House, which she lived in. So don't need a tour. Oh.
And then she sent a statement out after that saying that, because people were reporting that she'd snubbed Jill Biden. And basically she says that it wasn't personal. I just don't really want to be involved.
Yeah.
That's consistent. She didn't want to be involved in the campaign either. She showed up for some of the events, but she really didn't want to be involved in the campaign. Ivanka didn't want to be involved in the campaign or apparently this White House. I haven't seen the name Jared Kushner even come up.
No, I think he's behind the scenes advising him. You know, he won't let go of that Abraham Accords thing.
No, I mean, and that's good to have him involved in that, right?
Oh, yeah. It's got a lot of experience and context. And that's obviously, well, not obviously, but I believe, obviously, one of Trump's missions is to push the, what would you call it, normalization of relations between Israel and the Saudis.
Yeah. 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 They want to finish that off. And now they're going to get a chance to do it on Trump's watch so that, you know, this will be his foreign policy legacy, really, would be to normalize, with the exception of Iran, normalize all the relationships in the Middle East. And Iran might get there by other means. Iran and Syria, I should say, might get there by other means. But yeah, I mean, I don't blame her for not, I don't blame Melania for not wanting to be in the White House all that much. It was a bad experience for her the first time around, and you know.
And I've forgotten whether it was her assistant or press secretary that betrayed her with a book.
Yeah. Who needs that? I mean, really, honestly, who needs that?
Nobody. Nobody needs that.
Nobody needs that.
So. I think she's a great first lady, and I hope she plays an important role.
Well, I do, too. And I'm sure she'll be doing some of the traditional first lady things, but she's just doesn't want to be that involved in it. And again, I get it. I understand why. And maybe that's a good thing, too, because maybe the first lady thing is a little too much of a media construct and, you know, And I think the other part of that, too. And this is sort of this is sheer speculation on my part. Is that first ladies, at least traditionally speaking, and maybe not so much in the modern era, but, you know, throughout most of American history, the first lady was usually the doyen of the Washington, D.C. social scene. Right. Mm-hmm. She ran it. Right. That was the first lady's role, is to run that and to, you know, put people in their place when necessary, that type of thing. And I suspect that the existing social order in Washington, D.C. probably wasn't terribly kind to Melania the first time around.
They're not. She's an outsider like Trump and like the people he's picking to help him. And, you know, carefully timed for the election campaign. We had a Kamala cover story. We've had many Jill Biden cover stories, and they never did one on Melania, who, of all people, to me, she's like Jackie Kennedy.
Former supermodel. I can't imagine why you'd want her on the cover of your magazine. She's a former supermodel.
With classy. Because it's the TDS, except it's Melania TDS.
Yeah.
It's sad. It really is that we can't get above this somehow. You don't have to like them, but you have to treat them with the same kind of respect. We're all for equality until it comes down to people I don't like.
Well, on that note, we should probably bring this to an end, but I do have to, on that note, just to wrap this up, do you remember the song National Brotherhood Week by Tom Lehrer? This goes back to like 1965, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember the song?
No.
Oh my gosh, it was so fun. You know Tom Lehrer, right? I love Tom Lehrer's, right? Yeah. And I think the refrain-
Well, you like Dan Fogelberg too.
I did like Dan Fogelberg. Even know that, but
and
I actually
and Jim Croce.
I love Jim Croce, but Tom Lehrer was hilarious, right? And one of the refrains from National Brotherhood Week was, hooray for National Brotherhood Week, National Brotherhood Week. Lena Horne and Sheriff Clark are dancing cheek to cheek. It's fun to eulogize the people you despise as long as you don't let them in your school. It's fun to eulogize the people you despise.
Well, that's great. That's very clever.
Oh my gosh. It was from the TV show. That was the week that was. They had actually brought on Tom.
Oh, yeah.
For it. And oh my gosh. Yeah, he was a great humorist. And he was a Harvard mathematics professor, right? He was a mathematician. Brilliant.
Really? No, I didn't know that.
And that was his sideline, was doing this. And he sold a bunch of records and all this kind of stuff. He was doing one-man shows with his piano. And the guy's hilarious. Listen to his live records, because those are actually even better. But he claims that he gave it up because when Henry Kissinger won the Nobel Peace Prize, it made political satire moot. He was a little left of center, as you might imagine, for a Harvard professor. But still, he was absolutely hilarious. Yeah.
That's a job requirement.
Well, yeah, I think, especially these days. All right, my friend. Well, happy Thanksgiving to you. Happy second Thanksgiving to you, you Canadian.
Yeah, that's right. You connect lover, you. Yeah, thank you. And same to you and Marcia and everybody listening. Happy Thanksgiving. We have many things to be thankful for, despite the mayhem that we see all the time in the media. And one of the things to be thankful for is our partnership and my friendship, longtime friendship with Sir Edward here.
Amen to that. Amen to that, Prince Andrew of Twitter.
Yeah, that's great. So I suppose we'll be back next week.
Actually, I'm off next week. So we'll be back in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. So yeah, no two way. Next, what am I going to do next week? Well, okay. I suppose the country will have to stumble along, but.
Well, fortunately, we'll be back the week after that to rescue it from the precipice.
Okay. All right. As long as we do that.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
All right. Well, have a good holiday, everybody, and you. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. We'll see you next year.
No, that's still December.
Oh, well, I'll see you close to next year.
Almost next year. Andrew Malcolm, Prince of Twitter, Regent of Redstate.com, @AH Malcolm on the Twitters. We'll talk in 2 weeks.